Hello, welcome to Tiny Giant Jams 19, I believe that's the number on. I'm solo today. Kerry's off somewhere using her superhuman creative powers to make someone's work brilliant. She's turbocharging it up, no doubt, somewhere. So it's just me here doing podcast duties, letting you know what's going on, you know, yada yada. You're using the podcast, you get the score, don't you? You know, it's all about subscribe, tell your friends. We've got some good ones coming up actually over the next month or so. But let's talk about today, shall we? Let's cut to the chase and discuss today's podcast. I'm about to meet a woman called Annalisa Cakey, and she is a managing associate at Foot Anstey in Bristol. Foot Anstey are, of course, big lawyers. So that makes her a lawyer, technically. Sharp intake of breath. Obviously, this podcast, as we know, is about creativity and new technological platforms and all sorts of things regarding the sort of modern state of marketing. I actually met her at I'll Be Back Southwest, which we obviously run every month. And she gave a fascinating talk 2 or 3 months back. And it sort of triggered the idea that we should really do a podcast. Because at the end of the day, think about machine learning, think about neural networks, think about all the way that creativity gets sort of twisted and bent and manipulated. But is it legal? Is it staying within the framework of intellectual property and copyright? Well, Annalisa's the girl who knows. So let's dive into it and hear what she's got to say. Hello, Annalisa.
Hello, Richard.
Annalisa Cakey, how are you going?
Good, how are you?
Glorious. Weather's taken a turn for the worst. It's not the greatest of commentary on a podcast, is it, describing a view?
The weather and the view.
I'll tell you what, listener, if you were in this room here at Foot Anstey, and we'll come to that in a minute, it's a good old view, isn't it? Yeah?
It's a lovely view.
It's a beautiful view across the sort of vista of Bristol. You can see it's a proper...
Totterdown and Temple Meads.
Yeah. And even with a little bit of precipitation, it still looks pretty glorious, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. It
looks glorious. Anyway, you're good. Let's introduce you to start with, Annalisa. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of what we're going to talk about today, who are you and what do you do?
Who am I? Well, my name is Annalisa and I am a solicitor at Foot Anstey. Well, to be precise, a managing associate, if you want to know what that means, that just means...
Well, we like to be legally precise.
Legally precise, yeah. That just basically means that I'm a certain level, just below partner, I guess. And I specialise in commercial and intellectual property law, which is kind of a passion of mine.
Yes.
I used to be based in London not that long ago.
I think we need to be more... What sort of timeline would you put on that?
Well, I moved to Bristol in October last year. So October 2018. Having spent the last 10 years working in-house in the wonderful world of marketing and advertising for the Interpublic Group of Companies as one of their in-house lawyers.
Oh, so you're a lawyer in the ad game.
I was, yes.
And now you're a lawyer in the lawyer game.
In the lawyer game, yes. Okay. As many would say, I've gone back to the dark side.
That's like going from agency to client side, in effect.
Exactly,
yes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Look, it's happened. Are you new? Yeah. See, that's the first
thing. Similarities.
Who knew that happens in the legal world?
It does happen. Although it's very rare. It's actually a lot rarer than people think.
Let's do something for the Southwest listeners.
Yeah.
I could look at the demographics and work out. This is of no interest to you if you're listening in Kolkata or somewhere.
No, exactly.
What brought you to Bristol out of London?
Bristol is become quite the hub of, let's say, creativity. Well, I think it's always been a hub of creativity. I would say that certainly in the last few years it has accelerated that creativity through the growth of many accelerator programs, many infrastructures put in place to help new businesses get off the ground in the technology space, supported by many initiatives from across the region. And I think, the London market's very saturated, full already with lots of fun and wonderful things. Yeah. But actually, I think Bristol's got something better going for it, because not many people come and want necessarily expect such great ideas and great companies to come out of the Southwest. And I thought I'd get here before everybody else realises this is the best game in the UK, as far as I'm concerned.
Nice. Hey, I'll tell you what, I do like talking to... I don't like talking to lawyers. I've got no opinion whether I've had to talk to lawyers. Caveat. But it's good. You're very considered, aren't you, in your choice. I like that. I can see you think it through. It just comes out of my mouth more often than not before I've ever even thought about what I'm saying. But I can see that from you. Now, I'll just give the listener a sense of how and why and who and what we're doing today. Essentially, we met, haven't we? We met through... the I'll Be Back Southwest event monthly. I don't know if we've ever even mentioned it on this podcast. If we haven't, that's a ridiculously stupid missed opportunity. So intersection, creativity, advertising, AI. We have all sorts of talkers come along. You came along as someone who was interested in it. And then that'd be interesting to find out why you first came along. That's a bit of live podcast market research from yourself there, right? But then, hey, poacher to gamekeeper or gamekeeper to poacher, was it 3 months ago?
Yeah.
You actually were one of our speakers at one of our events. It was International Women's Day.
It was.
Special, wasn't it, actually?
Very special.
And you gave a really fascinating talk, because obviously in the realm of certainly some of the things we talk about, machine learning, deep fakes, deep learning, natural language processing, let's give it a title. I'm going to call it AI malarkey. There's lots of things that are tested, untesting. So if you're style transferring, example, from a style of painting into a movie, then I can see there's all sorts of legal head scratchings to go on.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so you gave a talk where you kind of set out, and it's fascinating. It was like having pro bono, wasn't it?
It was.
A pro bono lawyer. You probably gave us £300 worth of information.
Yeah, pretty much.
Everyone's scribbling down
there. Scribbling away.
Could you just repeat that? And I thought that's a brilliant opportunity. So when we met the other day, didn't you? You said, come on, I bit your hand off. Not actually literally listening.
Not quite.
It was a metaphorical hand biting. Because I think some of that stuff, if that's all right with you, to talk about some of these interesting issues about the law and creativity and AI, because as far as I can, a bit like the sky, it's a grey area.
It's a very grey area.
See what I did there?
Yes.
Well, that was improvisation at its absolute best.
Best.
So now, we were talking off microphone, like this is going to be my starting point for you, right? So I was saying to you, and if you haven't seen this, listener, well, I can't even send you to find it now because it's been taken down in most places. You can probably find it on the dark web.
Dark web.
Whatever that is. So Israeli startup called Canny AI. We showed the other night, didn't we? And it was basically a bit of deep fakery. It's a beautifully put together video. They've taken a whole bunch of clips of famous world leaders across the planet, all the big ones, and a few slightly obscure ones. Good test, actually. I'm not sure the Portuguese leader's on there, but I mean, I'm not sure how many people would know that. But all the big ones, aren't they?
Yeah.
And essentially, it is John Lennon's Imagine, with John Lennon singing it. But the way the deep fakeries worked and all that generative adversarial network malarkey, it appears that the world leaders are syncing their lips to the song, isn't
That's
it?
Right,
and when you see it, it's quite interesting, because it starts off with Donald Trump, obviously.
Yes.
And then it's Putin.
Putin.
I think he's got a cheeky glint in his eye, to be honest, Putin. I said, didn't I? I think he'd make a good pop star, Vladimir Putin.
Would,
can't believe I said that, but I know what I mean in my head. Yeah. And in various others, right?
Yes.
And so that was that. So they put that up 6 weeks ago. When I first saw it, you go, oh, that's a nice bit of deep fake, really nice. And the whole sentiment of imagine, yada, 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 all the people living life today. But my first thought was, blimey, how did they afford the rights of the song, right? That was my first thought. And then talking to you today, well,
I explained that.
There's a whole mishmash of things going on there, because subsequently it's been taken down, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So obviously they didn't have the rights
to
the song. But perhaps you'd explain to us what's going on.
Well, if I remember correctly, this is on YouTube. Was it on YouTube? Yeah, so it was on YouTube.
I don't know if it was on their website, but I think it probably was.
Yeah,
it was in many social places.
Yeah, so generally I would say that it probably first of all breached all the terms and conditions of all the whatever platform it was uploaded onto. Probably breached terms and conditions, because most platforms, even when you upload user-generated content, you generally are required, although again the enforcement of it is again a grey area, that you have to have the rights to what you upload. In this situation, so I think the initial thing would have happened is obviously it would have been taken down because it breached those terms. And why did it breach those terms? Well, one, they most highly unlikely had rights to the song Imagine by John Lennon, because effectively to get the right to license that track for global, effectively,
usage
would be in the millions, effectively, even for short snippets. And I know lots of people talk about this. There's a 30-second rule. Contrary to popular belief, there is no 30-second rule.
Is that an urban myth? I don't know.
An urban myth.
What is the...
Well, the 30-second rule generally is something that I heard quite regularly in my marketing ad days, of that if you're allowed to use up to 30 seconds of a track and it won't be an issue. That is not true in any way, shape, or form.
Who started that rule?
I have no idea.
What chancer came out of that?
Somebody did.
Could it be a short amount of time?
No.
There's no second. There's a zero second rule.
The only exception to the rule is if it is used in any sort of news broadcast, for example. So if a news program is reporting on factual, let's say it's just saying, oh, so and so has released a new single today or new album, whatever, and you were reporting on that snippet, which is a very small snippet, it wouldn't be.
They'd be very happy, wouldn't they? Yeah, exactly. The exposure,
absolutely. But anything else, if you're using it, if you use it on your website, if you use it on a video, and especially if your intent is commercial in any way, shape, or form, and that is a very broad term, you have to have the rights to use that music.
Okay.
And you have to pay the rights holders, and the rights holders could be not only the authors of the song, but also the composers of the song and the people who were the musicians that were involved.
They'd all have a claim.
Everybody needs a piece of the pie.
But
it gets complicated.
But as you said to me, there's an even more interesting situation about said video,
because they also took obviously snippets of video footage, which included obviously these various political leaders.
The Theresa May one is Theresa May's Christmas address. Okay.
So actually, there's an interest. There's two real issues with that. So one is not only the use of the images of the political leaders, which varies from country to country, because if you want to use somebody's image. In certain countries like the US, China, Russia and others, I won't need to go to list them, but people are of notoriety would be here for a while, can actually enjoy what we call personality rights. And personality rights is effectively the right to protect you. Effectively, if you can infringe somebody's personality right if you try and associate yourself and use that person's notoriety to promote your own brand or product or service and company. And in the UK, we don't actually have that personality right. It is not a legal right as such.
You've planted a flag in the sand there. So you're saying that if you did such a sort of, imagine a sort of deep faking thing where you used some UK faces who were known to the public, I would call celebrities, just public faces. Yeah. You're on good. There's a little tip there for you out there in creative. Use UK and maybe some other domiciles.
Yes.
But yes, so in the UK it doesn't exist.
No.
So Theresa May, they're in the clear.
Well, you're in the clear insofar as you could not be sued for infringing her personality rights. Now, however, having said that,
there we go.
You could potentially be sued for what we call passing off, which is a tort. But basically, again, you're trying to use that association with that person to effectively increase the exposure of your brand.
Yeah, because if I go to, I'm always sort of saying about, you know, people worry about the dark side of using such techniques and sort of manipulating audiences, fooling them to thinking things are what they aren't. I would make a case in that particular video and say, well, you know, it's part obvious. Of its humorous thing. It's obvious they're not really doing. But there obviously is a world of in deep fakery. Again, you go to certain parts of the web where people use that stuff to, you know, there's talk of this sort of horrible shit when they do like celebrity pornography and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's the thing where they disappear and you don't know who's done it. But in those situations where you are showcasing somebody doing something they wouldn't normally do, that therefore, I'm not talking about pornography particularly, it could be, and that whereby you're getting them to represent your business or brand in a way that's advantageous to you, but in no way anything they're associated with, that's where that would come in.
Absolutely. I mean, there was a case in the UK, especially around this, where Rihanna actually, it's actually quite fairly famous, it was a Rihanna versus Topshop case, which effectively where, and the reason why she wasn't UK resident.
That sounds like one of her remixes, doesn't it?
versus Topshop, But she sued Philip Green and his group of companies, Arcadia Group, for having used a photograph of her face, which was from an album cover of hers, on a T-shirt that was manufactured and produced and sold by Topshop. Now, she didn't agree to consent to that usage, and therefore she brought a case. Now, she was successful in her case. However, it was a bit of a misnomer in terms of it hasn't set a precedent in the UK for then people being able to enforce those personality rights I'm talking about. And the reasons behind that was more because she had a personal relationship with Sir Philip, with her daughter, I think Sir Philip Green's daughter. There was a bit more to it, that it wasn't just a case of, oh, you use my face, I'm going to sue you for that. There was a lot more that where the court allowed her in this instance to have that removed and to get compensation to be paid for. Because it comes down to money, isn't it? Just like anything comes down to these days, money. It's about
how much. She needs that cash.
Exactly.
I say that in ironic sense. I need that cash. Yes. I don't say that in ironic sense.
No,
why not? Now, yeah, so that's a case in point. But I was thinking about this. Mm-hmm. So take other things, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw some at you. Yeah. Throw some things if that's all right.
Yeah.
So how can I put this without hypothetically, someone who isn't me, let's call it that, right? Someone who isn't me takes two books, for example, right? You want to experiment. You're working with a neural network. You want to test things out. You want to try things out, see what happens, right? And neural networks and machine learning is all about training a machine to be predictive, et cetera, et cetera. And then you'll get an output.
And
it generates something new. Mm-hmm. And you can do that, a lot of that case, by mashing and mixing up stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if, for example, you take two well-known books, right? Top of my head.
Yeah.
I'll just go, I've got to improvise now. 50 Shades of Grey.
Yep.
I want to mash up, I want to get a neural network to output something that comes together, has been taught 50 Shades of Grey and American Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Don't know why I said that, but it's pretty weird. I'm not sure that. Whatever. No, it's quite 50 Shades of Grey and, say, Fight Club.
Okay. All right.
You put them together in a neural network, you train it, you know how long you train it, days, hours, weeks, months, whatever. You get an output, right? Mm-hmm. And that output, depending on whether it's character-based or word-based, an output, right? Now, because you've taken those two sources, right, and you've got something new, is that, in the eyes of the law, new, or is it purely a amalgam of, I just don't know, I'm looking at you. I'm looking at you for answers. Are we in a world now? How am I trying to say? Are we in a world now of test cases?
I think it depends on what, it depends what you want to do with it.
Right.
I think that generally, to be honest, just like anything.
Marketing sensei. Not me. I'm asking for a friend.
Absolutely. I think the problem is comes down to, at the end of the day, what is the output? Is the output something that you intend to publish, make money off, and therefore sell to the general public, etc., then there may be an argument to say, well, actually, there's copyright in both those books. There's copyright,
right,
because that copyright is held with the author, and potentially be owned by the publishing house as well, because obviously not all the authors will own the entire copyright of their books, because they're part of it is licensed to the publisher, etc. And AI, by the AI taking those two and amalgamating them, effectively it's creating a new, it is creating an amalgam of it, but effectively it's just compiling a new version and modifying the existing works. And I think where you've got modifying or adapting or using of existing works to create something new, then just like you would do the same if you wanted to use an image.
Why don't Collins Dictionary then sue everything that's ever written?
Well, I think it's probably because there's no point in them trying to sue everybody.
I'm just asking the question.
It's just individual words, aren't they? And they're just definitions. Those are just words, aren't they?
Okay.
I mean, at the end of the day, it'd be interesting. I mean, none of this has been tested yet, and this is part of the problem.
Oh, now that's interesting.
None of it's been tested. So, whilst, yes, if we take the strict letter of the law and say, right, okay, are there rights in both books? Yes, there are, because they belong to somebody.
Yeah.
Can you then readapt them for commercial use? No. Now, if you did it just because you want to do it as a hobby and you want to do it a bit of fun, that's a different matter. Or you want to do it as a spoof, again, that would probably fall within the exception. Or you want to use it for educational purposes.
Well, tell me about spoof.
Well, there is an exception. There is an exception in copyright law where you can adapt materials for a parody reason. So effectively, if you're trying to do a parody of, which is why you'll see that 50 Shades of Grey, if you go to a bookshop, or actually online probably, you'll find that there are other books called 50 Shades of Something, which are effectively a bit of a piss take of 50 Shades of Grey, written with different characters. I think there's one, I want to say there was one about something to do with the garden shed. I think there's one, I can't remember it's called, but I remember seeing it and just thought. So there are exceptions, but they're just for kind of a fun, playful usage, really.
Right.
It can't be.
So parody.
Parody is an exception.
I think it sounds to me you've always got to play the parody card, isn't it? Haven't you? It's a parody, Your Honour.
And also you've got to think of it, you've got to look at the risk, and you've got to look at, you weigh up at the end of the day, what is the appetite, for somebody to really then take action against an individual or a small company for that purpose. And you've always got to weigh up the risk versus reward kind of thing. Companies don't lightly go into deciding whether they're going to pursue something or not, because ultimately it's going to cost them money to pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
It's quicker to just send either, if it's an online content, send if there's a hosting provider of the online content, they'll send a takedown notice. Or if it's you as an individual, they'll send you kind of cease and desist letter and tell you stop using it. And now whether they would want to then bring a claim beyond that is their appetite to spend the money or to make an example of you. And nobody ever wants to be the example, because that's always the tricky one, isn't it?
Less said, the better.
But I would say,
I think that'd be the high point, Lisa.
Yes.
To get a cease and desist letter. I don't think I've succeeded.
No.
Yet, until I get one, because then you've as long as they stop at that point.
But I think the interesting thing about the point you were saying about the AI and actually using those to create something new. Actually, the AI is not infringing copyright at the end of the day. It's the person who's created the AI who actually is infringing the copyright.
You can't sue the machine.
So you can't sue the machine, no. You can sue the creator of the machine.
Yeah.
Because the court will always look at the person most closely connected to that, to the AI.
So do you think, AI is across many facets of life, right, in many different ways. But if we think purely about this as a creative execution, whether it's in marketing or advertising or contemporary culture or whatever, like a classic case is you'd have seen like style transfer, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So where you take a style of something and then you put it, again, is that the same? So if I take a photograph, a style of photography, and then apply it into a different genre,
mm-hmm,
again,
style is a tricky one, because style, technically speaking, style is not necessarily covered.
Right.
So it is a bit more of a grey. It's a definitely bit more of a grey area. If you're copying, you know, copying an image is, or manipulating an existing image, is a lot more tricky, because effectively there is copyright and rights in that.
So we get
image.
Into plagiarism. But if you're yes. saying the I don't want to put it, if it's the essence of it, but it's not the actual shot. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you can see, I've seen some beautiful stuff where you basically take painting styles, and again, that's another thing. I'm going to talk about how long they've been dead, and we might come to that.
Yeah.
But there's a really beautiful thing where you can take an Edward Hopper style paintings of all those kind of lonely night people, and then you apply that style transfer onto an image you've got, and it becomes a Hopper.
Yeah.
Right? To me, so it is a you know, ultimately an AI technique that I think we'll see a lot more of.
Yeah.
But from a legal standpoint, are we going to, over the course of the next sort of few years, as this technology becomes more mainstream, becomes the norm perhaps, will we see more business for lawyers, do you think? Or it just become the norm that it becomes acceptable, almost the democratization of this sort of technology removes the ownership of the original idea?
I think, it's two things really. I think the problem is let's not forget the legislation that effectively covers all this, all the work that's generated by AI is from 1988. So,
good Lord.
Exactly.
That's 31 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that is currently still that legislation that effectively is protecting rights that are derived.
Does it have a name, that legislation?
It is the Copyright Designs and Patents Act 1988.
One of my favourites.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what's holding, that's our framework.
Framework, which is clearly at the moment, obviously, not moved with the times. And it's very, didn't envisage in 1988, necessarily, that we'd move to an AI, a world where works are being created through, through programming and through
indeed, and at the speed that things are moving, exactly. It's almost like, could you even have rolling legislation? Because it could easily, the legislation
again,
that may
hard.
Have held in place a year ago would
change
still
again.
Be
yeah.
behind it now.
Yeah. And there's also, obviously, the EU Copyright Directive, but we haven't really focused much on that because we don't know whether we're going to see PDU or
the
not.
Thing. Now, this is the thing recently, that happened, right?
Yeah.
I would like to see this because my son, I'm going to name check him, Harv, my son, 16. He got in a right tears about this. Right?
Did he?
It's quite good. For, he could it's be good. Completely disconnected, doing whatever teenage boys. But he was prattling on about this. For months before it became a thing, you better watch out. You won't be able to do a meme anymore. It's the death of memes on Twitter. It's going to kill social. And I was like, I hadn't paid a lot of notice. And then it suddenly sort of happened, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was a sort of hullabaloo. But we can't achieve anything when it comes to Europe and Brexit, Remain, whatever.
Yeah.
Listen, it doesn't matter what you decide.
Yeah.
We won't judge you for
no.
it, right? But if we were to remain in, right?
Yes.
Don't get angry, listener. It's just a hypothetical. What would that EU? It seems.
Well,
from what I know, it seems.
The directive is a bit harsh.
Yeah.
And
it seems to stifle creativity.
However, just to give our listeners a little bit of extra info.
Yeah.
On actually how EU legislation works is that because it's a directive, it actually doesn't automatically apply once it's been issued.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, it is then down to the government, the UK legislature, to actually enact it into the UK's own act itself. So there will have to be a new Copyright Act, effectively.
Oh, this is another
30. And it has obviously the ability then to make changes and interpret it in the way that it sees fit for its own country. So there is an option. So there is always an opportunity to make changes to that, provided it's in the same spirit. But you don't have to replicate it in the exact same way as the EU has determined. And a lot of people get a bit het up about this because they think that anything that EU says, we have to do black and white what they say.
I miss those Benny Bananas. Yeah, I miss them
exactly.
So so one or two. What would, off that direct? Well, if it came on board, obviously in Europe, mm-hmm. I'm assuming it applies if they follow the directive.
Yeah.
If it was taken on root and branch, what sort of things would become?
Well,
does it mean like memes? That's it. You can't use that because that.
Well, they yeah. I mean, there is a potential, but again, it's very hard because I think at the end of the day, it's all about the. I think that they're trying to take away the ability for just, you know, Joe Bloggs, member of the public, yeah. to use memes, which is a bit silly, really, because effectively it's just personal content. They're not doing it because they're getting financial gain for it. We're not going to start suing everybody that uses a meme. So it's just a bit daft, really. I don't think it's necessary. I think whether they want to go against the companies actually... If there are any, I mean, assume that there are companies actually do produce a ton of memes, I guess.
Mm, well, it's Giphy's business model.
Yeah, exactly. So it may be that they will try and shut those down. But I don't think that's going
to
happen.
Are they just trying to spoil our fun?
I think so, yeah.
Bloody Europeans. No, I like them. Don't go taking views on me, listener.
I think that's just general. I think there has been a lot... I think the problem is just like anything with the internet and the availability of online content. I think what has really changed over the last 20 years or so, very much so, is that the revenue streams from content
yeah.
is obviously decreased for certain revenue streams, obviously. We talk about print publications, massively so, and everything's online. So I think, you know, to an extent, it's just another way, really, if we really boil down to it, make it bare bones here. It's about the people that are responsible who may be featuring the memes or the film or something to effectively just to recapture again some of the revenue from their own original.
It's all about the money. Always about the amounts, isn't it?
Yeah.
Trousering. Yeah. As I call it.
Because I think that even 20 years later, when they've got a meme, I don't know, of Top Gun or something, like... Well,
that's the most wonderful thing I think about. It's like things that can be very obscure
yeah.
and very kind of, well, almost like unknown, can easily become
yeah.
a sensation,
yeah.
can't they?
Yeah.
So maybe just, while we've got this opportunity,
mm-hmm.
have you in the room. I was thinking about this. I'm going to put... This is going to be the first of our... It's obviously you work for Dunstan, you're
yeah.
a lawyer.
Yeah.
You know a lot of very important things that a lot of people don't. I might put this actual podcast behind a paywall. You can listen to it for £50. Anyway, no, I'm not gonna do that. No, listen. So maybe one or two. So for those listeners who are working in these kind of on the cusps, the edge of technology, trying new things. There's some other, very quickly, a few tips and tricks, things they might, elements of the law that they may not have considered that they should possibly have on their radar. For example, what comes on my head from the talk, maybe saying about the 50 years, the 75, is that right? My numbers might be wrong.
But I remember you saying about... So copyright has different, so the right, the owner of the copyright in the works, original works, that varies depending on what type of work it is.
Okay.
So, for example, if it was literary, dramatic, music, or artistic works,
yeah.
the right, the copyright exists for a period of 70 years from the author's death, unless it's computer generated. If it's computer generated, it is 50 years from its creation.
Wow.
If it's published sound recordings, it's 70 years from publication or public availability.
Yeah.
Unpublished sound recordings is 50 years from its creation.
I hope you're taking notes, listener.
Yeah. Films
yeah.
is 70 years from the death of the last principal director, screenplay author of dialogue, or composer of music.
Oh, I'm going to stop a minute. Let's just we have to process that. So, I've got to use my brain very fast. So, let's say something like Casablanca.
Yeah.
Which I think it's made in the war. So that's like 19. Let's say off the top of my head, I'm not going to even pick my phone. I'm going to say it's about 43 or 44 Casablanca's like made. That, yeah. So it's like 76 years. What was that number you said?
So 70 years from the death of the last of the principal director screenplay. Oh God. So you've got to go through. You've got to actually go through the production team and figure out if.
Really?
If it's been 70 years since the last one died.
Of course, people are living longer these days.
Yes, exactly.
So really, that could well be 120 years.
Who knows?
Yeah?
I mean, it depends how old or young, let's say.
So basically, you're saying anything that anybody creative can use out of copy is green sleeves. Is that right?
Possibly.
No, what? Really? Yeah. So when you think about, you know, I have to start getting a bit niche in my experiments here.
Yeah.
So, like, what happens then? So the time passes.
You'd have to
actively hunt and
you'd
find.
You actually have to go through the credits of the film, see who the check who the director, screenplay author, the dialogue author, and the music composer was.
Yeah.
And effectively figure out which ones are still alive and which ones are not.
Why is computer generated music less? Well, you said it was 70. Was it 70?
70 years from the author's death and 50 for computer generation.
What's the computer done to get 20 years lobbed off?
I suspect it's because it's quicker to actually compose music on a computer.
Maybe. Wow, yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. So really, it's pretty much, if you want to use anything, really, unless it's,
The shortest copyright is actually for typographical arrangements, and that's only 25 years from publication.
Oh, well, that's illegal. A typographical arrangement. What does that mean exactly?
So, like fonts and things like that.
Okay, so if for those of you keen out there to play around with creative AI in the font world. Hey, get that as much Gil sound as you possibly can. Yeah.
Or there's broadcast, and broadcast is only 50 years from broadcast.
Wow.
Or there are some limitations on that.
So essentially, if you just got to be patient.
You got to be very patient.
Or pass an idea along to your grandchildren.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe their grandchildren.
Maybe.
Wow. So really.
Yeah.
So what's my take out? Because we've had a good. To be honest, this is going to be a two. We're going to do this again, right? We scratched the surface today, right? But my take out from you is that really, if I look around, like, social media, forget AI and machine learning and all that for a minute. If I just look around the world of, you know, digital technology has allowed for, in a way, it's a normal phrase, the democratization of creativity, right? Because everyone can be an artist, can't they?
Absolutely.
And as we can see through YouTubers and influencers, etc.
Instagrammers and the
it's
rest.
It's all that.
Yeah.
But am I right in thinking that a massive percentage of everything that people put their eyes upon is technically infringing?
Correct.
And yet, the world still rolls along.
Absolutely.
Isn't that not strange?
It is strange. But I would say, I think that, again, and the other urban myth that's my favourite one to dispel is generally, just because it's on Google and it's available to download or to use doesn't mean that you can do it for free.
That was the lawyer. She's been warned, listener. Hey, don't get all frivolous about it.
Especially if you want to make, I mean, obviously, I always caveat this with, if you want to make money from it, that's why you should use it. Or you should at least check that you have the rights to
come
use
up
it.
With your own original ideas.
Exactly.
And make your own work.
And make sure you can prove you have as well.
Fair enough. I totally get what you're saying, because like, it's digital, it's on your phone, it's on your computer. Yeah. If it's in front of you and you're looking at it, there's a mindset in it that I can just own
just
that.
Just own that, yeah.
Yeah. And that's just not
I'll just
true.
Use it, yeah.
Okay. But, well, look, that's been an absolute We have barely scratched the surface, haven't we?
True,
right?
Yeah.
I'm sure we got a thousand other.
More.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, I know.
We're going to get you back, and maybe listener, if you've got questions, we could kind of maybe we'll do a Q&A one next.
Q&A, maybe.
That'd be all right.
Yeah,
I'd love that. So, look, absolutely. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you,
Alisa. See you, and I'll be back soon, maybe.
Definitely.
Hopefully, I won't see you in court.
No, I hope not either.
Yeah, you could represent her, couldn't
That's
you?
That's true.
I'd throw myself on the mercy of Annalisa. Thank you very much, and see you again.
See you.